Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, you're listening to Make Mine a Double, a little segment I've put together where I can share just a bit more of what I really think about today's news and political crazy. So sit back, relax, and join me for a few sips of sanity and make mine a double. Hey, folks, welcome to Make Mine a Double. Michael Steele here coming at you after what has been one of the more interesting weeks in this political season thus far, with the convergence of Nikki Haley dropping out of the presidential race in the Republican primary, the State of the Union, Trump meeting with Viktor Orban, the nationalist leader of Hungary, and a whole lot more crazy that we just can't put our fingers on all at once. We just have to, you know, just grab what we can and keep going, because it's that kind of crazy right now. But I just want to take a moment and spend a little time giving you my thoughts on what I think has been a phenomenally interesting week. So why don't we start with Nikki Haley and just, you know, just the idea that Nikki's race was somehow going to transform the landscape politically for Donald Trump and for the Republican Party. It did not. And I don't understand why people were just hanging their hat on that hook when there was no hook. And if there was a hook, it wasn't attached to anything. Nikki's campaign was the creation of donors. It was creation of desperate people who at the last minute decided, oh, we should really try to take Donald Trump out. Despite what a lot of us were saying for many, many months, encouraging Nikki to just lean into all the stuff that she was doing in the last 8 weeks of her campaign, she should have been doing in the first 6 months of her campaign. And she didn't. And so what we learned was you can't put your foot in a bathtub and a shower at the same time. You just can't, right? Even if the shower is in the tub, because you're going to slip and fall. Somewhere you're going to slip and fall. And she tried to have her feet in two different parts of this primary season, one in which she was trying to be quasi-MAGA and, you know, winking and nodding at some of the crazy out of Trump land, and others being critical of it. And the reality of it is you can't do both. You couldn't do both. And I think she paid the ultimate price for that. So the primary is turned into the general. And both Donald Trump and Joe Biden are now well positioned to go head to head. They're going to hit their delegate counts, no problem, even though Biden still may have a few stragglers in the Democratic primary. The Republicans have consolidated. And as we all know, Republicans come home. How do we know that? Because a lot of the voices who were sort of declaring their doubts about Trump or their concerns about Trump or Trump was unqualified to be president again have now summarily bent the knee. Mitch McConnell bent the knee this week. Chris Sununu, governor of New Hampshire, who was the leading charger on behalf of Nikki Haley. He was the leading voice. He was the lone Republican governor out there stomping for her, inviting her to New Hampshire and giving her all the groundswell he could create for her, bent the knee to Donald Trump this week. Oh, but he did tell us, I stand by all those things I said about Donald Trump, but he should be the next president of the United States. That's just some dumbass bullshit. But anyway, people like to play in bullshit for some reason. I guess they think they don't stink afterwards, but they do. It smells. And it doesn't help the political conversation. The reality still remains this race is going to be what we said it would be a year ago. Donald Trump and Joe Biden head to head. And the question of democracy is on the ballot ever more today than it has ever been. And the fact remains that we have to decide as citizens whether or not we want to vote for extremism or freedom. It's that simple. I mean, y'all can shape democracy however you want. That's the beauty of democracy. I can make it be for me whatever it is. I am a part of this organ, and I can play whatever role I want to play because I'm free. So ultimately, this is about your freedoms as you define them, right? And it's about your freedoms as you hope for them for your kids and your grandkids against extremism that want to strip away those freedoms, that tell you I alone can fix it. Not you, me. I alone can fix your problems. That tells you I am your retribution. I don't need you to be my retribution, bitch. I didn't ask you to do that for me. I can handle my own business. I can deal with my own fights. I can fight for my own freedoms. I don't need you to act on my behalf. I didn't ask you to do that. It's about the extremism that will tell you that you do not have control over the decisions regarding your health, your body, your situation. You have no control over that, but the government does. This from the very same party that once, as I recalled from our battles back in 2010 over healthcare, made the case that the government should not stand between you and your doctor, that those decisions are your choices for you and yours, not the government. And now here we are, where that extremism has led to playing the role of deciding for women what they can and cannot do with their bodies. And even more so with those families, as we see in the state of Alabama, who are trying to start, that the government is now saying that, well, you can do IVF, but if you do, and anything happens to that fetus, to that embryo, it is a fetus, and therefore has all the protections of the law. Well, they started walking that back real quick when they realized the problems with that narrative, with that line, with that kind of thinking. And so it really is an election about extremism versus freedom. Don't lose sight of that, folks, because if you do, what comes next ain't going to be pretty. That's all I'm telling you. So you had that setup. And then you had the moment of the State of the Union in which Joe Biden came out. I don't know what this brother ate before that speech, but whatever it is, he should keep eating it, because he was so hyped to give this speech, he didn't even let the Speaker of the House introduce him. I mean, he just walked up to the podium, gave him the speech, gave the Vice President the speech, turned around and started talking. And I love that moment. You should go look at it on YouTube, that moment when Speaker Mike Johnson stood there and was like, do I say something? Do I sit down? What exactly do I do right now? So he sat down. And the president then went on to lay out what was a very full-throated and powerful, I thought, explanation of what he's done and what his vision for the country is about. He talked about, you know, the solidarity around this idea of freedom and why that was so important. He talked about the efforts that he put in place regarding prescription drugs and cooling inflation and lowering the price of insulin. It just became this real moment. And even on the issue of the border, where Marjorie Taylor Greene showed her dumbass, first by coming into the chamber wearing a hat, which was against the rules of the House. And when she was confronted by the Sergeant of Arms, she just said, well, I have a First Amendment right to wear this hat. No, you don't, bitch. Shut up. You ain't got, you know, you don't. But these people are all about the performance. They're all about showing their ass. And she did. But even in that momentary exchange between her and Joe Biden coming in, that would later translate to her heckling him, he shut her up, shut her down. by you know, taking on the noise and showing once again why he's fit to be president. I disagree with Joe Biden on a number of policy issues, just as I disagree with some Republican presidents on some policy issues. But the one thing I never have to worry about with a president, a former president like George Bush or current president like Joe Biden, is that at the end of the day, they didn't want to use the toilet paper, the Constitution as toilet paper. They wanted to uphold the Constitution and use it as the force to keep the country focused and going in the right direction, expanding democracy, not contracting it. But that's what we have right now in this race that's going on. And I think people just need to be aware of it. So then there was this interesting moment as well, where after the speech, the Biden team decided they're going to hit the streets. So they went out the next day, Friday, kicking off with an ad to sort of carry that message from the night before into the campaign itself.
Look, I'm not a young guy. That's no secret. But here's the deal. I understand how to get things done for the American people. I led the country through the COVID crisis. Today, we have the strongest economy in the world. I passed a law that lowers prescription drug prices, caps insulin at $35 a month for seniors. For 4 years, Donald Trump tried to pass an infrastructure law, and he failed. I got it done. Now we're rebuilding America. I passed the biggest law in history to combat climate change because our future depends on it. Donald Trump took away the freedom of women to choose. I'm determined to make Roe v. Wade the law of the land again. Donald Trump believes the job of the president is to take care of Donald Trump. I believe the job of the president is to fight for you.
And that's what it's all about. And that is the job of the president, to fight for the American people, not to fight for the man in the office. And that's what Donald Trump wants you to do. Again, it's the difference between extremism and freedom. And I think that that was a very clarifying moment politically for Joe Biden to go out and just kind of state something that a lot of folks in his camp and outside of his camp was hoping would happen, and that is crystallizing for the American people the difference in these two campaigns and why one choice is better than the other. And the fact that, as we saw the State of the Union and in this ad up front, I'm not a young guy. I'm old. Dude, I mean, I don't know what people thought the hell would happen when a 77-year-old Joe Biden running for the president would run for re-election at 81. What, do you thought he would youthen? That in 2024, he'd be 73 or 74? I don't understand what people thought would happen. And so he had to take it on. He took it on and he dealt with it straight up. So I got to give him props for that. On the other side, there was the response. And the response was delivered by Alabama Senator Katie Britt, who, how should I put this, I think left an indelible mark on the moment of responding to the State of the Union.
Good evening, America. My name is Katie Britt.
She probably should have left it right there, because quite honestly, it just went incredibly downhill after that. There was just so much about this speech that screamed overcoached, overprepared, wrong emphasis, wrong focus. This Stepford wife vibe was pronounced. And I don't understand what folks were thinking when they thought this was the way to do the presentation. I've seen Senator Britt in other settings talking naturally. She's very good. She's very impressive. And what happened, what they did, what happened to her was a disservice to her leadership. I get going through the talking points, but it was just unmitigated mess the way they prepped her for this. But then not only was the prepping bad, but then they gave her a storyline to share that was, unfortunately for her, a lie, and typical for how Republicans engage.
I traveled to the Del Rio sector of Texas. That's where I spoke to a woman who shared her story with me. She had been sex trafficked by the cartels starting at the age of 12. She told me not just that she was raped every day, but how many times a day she was raped. The cartels put her on a mattress in a shoebox of a room, and they sent men through that door over and over again for hours and hours on end. We wouldn't be okay with this happening in a third world country. This is the United States of America, and it is past time, in my opinion, that we start acting like it.
Powerful, heartbreaking, heart-wrenching, just absolutely a stunning story to share. Oh, were the facts, were it true the way she presented it? First off, this didn't happen in the United States. It happened in the state of in Mexico. It happened in Mexico. It didn't happen in the United States. It didn't happen while Joe Biden was president of the United States, meaning between 2021 and today. It happened 2008. What is horrific about this is not just the story, but the fact that the Republicans would have Senator Britt convey this very tragic and personal story of this woman in a way that it was used as political fodder to strike at a sitting president of the United States, to throw mud on him personally and his administration. And it was an unfortunate lie that was told. In that the implication was somehow what happened to this woman was Joe Biden's fault. What happened to this woman happened under Joe Biden's watch. And that was utter bullshit. And they owe this woman an apology for denigrating her story and just using it as political fodder in this presidential campaign. It is unfortunate. And it is the kind of thing that I think we need to gird ourselves against, because we're going to see more and more of it over the next few months as this campaign unfolds. I certainly will keep my my eye and ears open for it so that you are aware what the bullshit is and where it's coming from on both sides, to be honest. I suspect there'll be some third party actor out there who'll put some stuff out there thinking they're going to help Joe Biden, and it'll turn out not to be the case. But this did not help the Republican case for the border. It did not help their case against Joe Biden, especially given the fact that this was largely a lie. And most equally important in the eyes of many, when they had an opportunity to do something about stories that like this that do occur at the hands of the cartel, by putting in place stronger border security, putting in place a stronger border enforcement, putting in place the personnel to do that, putting the money and resources in place to use technology, putting in place a very conservative border bill that Donald Trump himself wanted passed while he was president. This Republican Party said no. They said no to that young woman and many other women who are trafficked in this border crisis. and the families that are impacted by the ruthless behavior of many before coming to our borders to cross, seeking asylum and seeking again freedom. So let's hope for better. It will be hard to see if the party, Republican Party, behaves better. Finally, one other piece, which I think, again, is consistent with all of that I'm talking, you know, which is talking about and that occurred this week. You had this incredible scene of former President Donald Trump welcoming Hungarian President Viktor Orban to Mar-a-Lago. He didn't come to Washington see President Biden. He came to Mar-a-Lago to visit Trump. Orban is an authoritarian. He is trying his best to turn his country into what he calls, quote, an illiberal state. He has resisted expansion, the expansion of NATO, and additional financial aid to Ukraine. He's posted videos on his Instagram account of himself with former President Trump and Melania Trump, as well as an apparent Beatles cover band at Mar-a-Lago, which I guess that's supposed to soften the authoritarianism. I don't know how that works. But here's the thing that I find interesting, knowing who Viktor Orban is and what he's doing and has done in his own country. Donald Trump refers to him as a smarter or better leader. There's nobody smarter. There's no one better than Viktor Orban. So he's found another boo buddy, right? Someone who's his new boo. I don't know what that means for Putin, but you've got to be concerned, America, when a man who served as president wants to be president again, tried to hold on to power by overthrowing the results of the last election, wants to grab that power back using a model by authoritarians around the globe like Orban and Putin. We've got to be concerned about what that means for us. We've got to be concerned about why the battle between extremism and freedom is real. And if it isn't real for you now, trust me, baby, it will become real for you later on if you miss the moment. And we can't afford as a nation to miss the moment. Donald Trump does not deserve to be anywhere near 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and damn sure doesn't deserve to sit behind the Resolute desk again when he has embraced and has told us he's embraced a populism, nationalism that is antithetical to the very principles of this fledgling democracy. Folks, we are a young nation. We grew fast. We grew fierce. We're still young, though, and we're still susceptible to the baser instincts of some out there who want to use our Constitution and our freedoms against us, to tell us those freedoms are a threat to others and therefore need to be curtailed, that tell us those freedoms are a threat that needs to be pared back, repositioned. And I think that we need to be smart about what all of that means for us. As Donald Trump said in January, from a campaign rally stage, when talking about Viktor Orban, quote, "It's nice to have a strong man running your country," end quote. My response to that is bullshit. It is not, because it is not about freedom in that case. It is about the rule of one man over a free people, and that we cannot allow to stand. And that's why every day I have to make mine a double. Take care, y'all. Till the next time.
Facepalm America is a show for progressives and others on the left who want to keep up with the ridiculousness that this country dishes out, find out what cable news misses when they're waiting for Trump to appear at a podium, and also, every once in a while, get a laugh at how silly this hot mess of a nation of ours really is. If that's you, listen to Facepalm America. You can go to facepalmamerica.com or find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.